This is Taking Aim with
Rob Shundman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, it's a depression, the relentless class war on working people. It's a depression, wrote Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor, in his blog, April 3rd. Still not the Great Depression of the 1930s, but it's a depression. Stop worrying about Wall Street, Reich says. Worry about American workers. Let's look at the statistics. Last month alone, the average loss of jobs was 30,000 a day. 5.6 million jobs have been lost in this recession. 13.2 million workers unemployed, officially. 2 million, or 40% of them, have been unemployed between January and March of this year. For those employed, wages and salaries shrank at 4% of the annual rate. This eliminates $265 billion from the economy. Those working part-time because there aren't enough hours or they can't find full-time work, that figure has soared by 9 million. What is a recession? Manufacturing jobs have lost 10% of all manufacturing jobs in the U.S. The construction industry lost 14% of its current job level. Temporary help, a large sector of the U.S. economy, is down almost 30% since the beginning of what they call this recession. Yes, it's a depression, concludes Robert Reich. Most of all, he says, stop worrying about Wall Street. Worry about American workers. Ralph?
It's hard to separate those things, Maya. An article recently on the actual nature of the bailout and of the funds that have been basically looted by the banker gangsters, $1.44 quadrillion in derivatives. It's hard to conceive of what that represents, but it is, of course, the nature of late capitalism and fictive capital that they virtually are creating vast, overwhelming Ponzi schemes. There is no constructive or productive work that can generate profits and surplus value that can compare with this paper shuffling scam scheme of late capital. It's a depression, all right, because the structure of capitalism has reached the point where it is incapable any longer of, in any significant sense, advancing productive forces within a national framework or an international framework. Robert Reich has been one of the few functionaries of the ruling class for Clinton and considered for Obama who have not kept quiet about the nature of what is happening. And as you indicated, Maya, he was establishing that the nature of the crisis of the moment is that it is a depression. He says it's not on the scale of 1929, but then at the same time, Robert Reich, like others, is acknowledging that the bailout of banks and the handing over of upwards of now $12.2 trillion to them is only going to exacerbate the crisis and deepen it. What are the realities about unemployment? One out of every six workers is unemployed or what they call underemployed. It's 15.6%. But as Reich indicates, he doesn't spell this out, but it is very clear. He says every American right now is within 2 degrees of separation of someone out of work. This broader anxiety expresses itself as less willingness to spend money on anything other than necessities and to spend further. There's this reluctance to spend further contracts the economy, leading to ever more job losses. But what is important about this critique is that there is a category called the underemployed. The underemployed are those who are working 1 day a week, a half day a week, 2 days a week. They are, in fact, unemployed for 70-80% of the work time, and they are not counted amongst the unemployed. Those who have, in fact, been unemployed and after 2 weeks no longer look for jobs because they can't find them, they are not counted amongst the unemployed. So those 15.6% figures that are being cited here don't even begin to indicate the magnitude of contraction, which is a covert word for devastation for working people. No jobs, no income support, because one of the consequences of this, just to finish this point, which Reich spells out, and we will detail in the programming of this weekend to come, is that as people lose their jobs and as the corporations are licensed to contract, they are able by law to abrogate all of the contractual agreements with working people. They can cancel their pensions. They can cancel their job contracts. They can cancel their health care. They can do it without any consequences. They can simply breach things on which people's lives depend. So the full magnitude of this will only begin to unfold as we examine it. Unemployment means devastation for working families.
Ralph, many people now in the United States are working as self-employed. They might be gardeners, they might be home care workers, they might be domestic workers, or they will have other types of self-employment as writers or as editors, many different forms, carpenters, and often they are paid under the table. So they're eking out a living here and there, trying to find some work that doesn't show up on the official figures, the reported figures. Of the recognized jobs, there were 133 million recognized jobs in 2009 March. And of these, it's interesting to note the changes in the U.S. economy. 85% were service jobs, that is, health care, finance industry, restaurants, and so forth. Only 15% were jobs involved in goods production. Robert Reich is taking a big distance, a very big distance from the Obama administration. He, like Paul Krugman, are the old New Deal economists. And what Krugman and Reich are saying is that the focus of the Obama administration on Wall Street and on the finance industry is inappropriate. Because if you look at how the United States got out of the Great Depression, which was with the vast war machine, and the full production capacity because of government spending at that time for World War II and the armaments industry. But still, it was government spending. And that's why Reich says the only way out of any recession in capitalist terms is for the government not to fund Wall Street, but to build up the economy, to build up the workforce. And so he talks about how you would do it. Instead of dismantling General Motors, start making more buses and electric cars and start focusing on the transit system. Increase funding to education. If you look at the New York Times today, the business section, after recession, recovery will take years, the New York Times also points to the fact that the shortfall now in the economy is $1 trillion in annual sales and other transactions, and that since the Great Depression, there has never been such a severe loss of output, and that the only way to increase the output is for massive government spending. Ralph?
Here's the problem with the analysis of Robert Reich and of Paul Krugman. They are honest enough to characterize what is happening here with respect to the $10-12 trillion of funds just handed over to the banks, is suggesting that this has absolutely nothing to do with, quote, stimulating the economy or increasing production. On the contrary, it's simply looting the society and creating an even greater catastrophe in terms of a collapsed capacity in the short-term future. But their problem and their limitation is not understanding a very fundamental aspect of late capitalism, i.e., capitalism has a falling rate of profit as workers have organized themselves to demand a living wage, to demand Social Security in the form of health care and pensions. That reducing the rate of profit, the ability to extract surplus value, profit out of the labor of working people that produces everything of value, creates an inherent crisis for capitalism and drives it into the mad race to the sweatshop bottom, forever seeking a way to pit workers against each other globally and to drive wages down. The celebration of the so-called market has nothing to do with trade, free or otherwise. It has everything to do with compelling workers to give up their gains and to coerce them by pitting them against each other for a mad competitive rush to the sweatshop bottom. The trade union bureaucracy and its expression, the Democratic Party, which is the reform wing of capital, so-called, is the instrument for facilitating everything from NAFTA to free trade to the mad rush to the sweatshop bottom. And insofar as the crisis of capitalism has led to reliance on fictive capital, there is no way that late capital can or will engage in productive forces, either through public spending projects or what have you, because it's inherently without profitable gain for the captains of capital. They have no institutional or class motive to do such a thing, nor will they. They are incapable of doing it. They can only do that by eating into their privilege, by cutting into their accumulated gains, their theft. Their profit is nothing more than the thievery of the value of labor that they have extracted and that they have monopolized for themselves. So what we're looking at here is the incapacity of capitalism to meet any of the elementary needs of human beings, of working people on the planet. There will be no such reformism. And one thing about his relationship to the New Deal, Maya. The New Deal did not get capitalism out of its crisis. What got capitalism a temporary buy was the role of the Communist Party under Stalin and the liberals. They're at it to this day in the nation, on various stations, including those of Pacifica, promoting Obama, people with the illusions about reformist capitalism. They have done what was done in the 30s, continue this process of co-opting and deflecting and containing disaffection amongst working people and perpetuating the ideological fiction that capitalism can resolve the crisis of society. It cannot, it will not, it is in rapid and terminal decay. That's the inherent character of this. It is only by revolutionary transformation, that's not an abstraction. Working people, the mass of society, has no way out within the straitjacket of the present economic and social order. That's the inherent reality. The World Socialist website, Maya, on April 4th, did an analysis of the very material that Robert Reich addresses, and its U.S. unemployment rate hits 8.5%, Andre Dumont's article. And it states, this level of 8.5% unemployment in March is the highest level since 1983, in fact, according to figures released by the Labor Department. The 663,000 jobs that were lost, bringing total losses to 5.1 million, two-thirds of these job losses occurred in just the past 5 months. This is the highest absolute number on record since records have been kept. The total number of unemployed people increased by 694,000 to 13.2 million, the highest absolute number on record. Every sector has seen job losses in March. Manufacturing, 161,000. Construction, 126,000. The service sector, a total of 385,000 jobs. Professional business service sector lost the most jobs of all, 133,000. Retail lost 48,000. Leisure, 40,000. Labor Department has to revise upward its job loss figure by 86,000 for the month of January. They have to put the total losses with just that month as 741,000. February's figure also being revised up to 706,000. It exceeds every recession since the Second World War. Every recession, it is approaching, as Damon correctly observes, contrary to what Reich says, it is now approaching the severity of the Great Depression. It is the longest downturn of the post-war period, a larger number of job losses than any downturn since 1929. Note this. The official unemployment rate doesn't begin to tell the story. It takes into account only people who are both unemployed and actively looking for work, an increasingly small percentage of the unemployed. This, what the category of what is called discouraged workers had reached 2.1 million in March alone. These numbers are extraordinary insofar as they demonstrate that the real percentages of unemployed are rapidly approaching those of 1929. The number of people working part-time because they can't get a full-time job has risen 80% in the past year. It hit 8.6 million in just February and 9 million in March. The people who are now reduced to working a half day a week, 1 day a week, 2 days a week at reduced pay, it's up 80%. If one adds up the discouraged and working part-time percentages of the population, you begin to get an understanding of the magnitude of this crisis, which is being underestimated across the board.
Ralph Dean Baker, a director of the Center of Economic and Policy Research in Washington, was interviewed by Peter Goodman and Jack Healy of the New York Times on April 4th. He stated, quote, "There's just no way we're anywhere near a bottom." What the Obama administration, with its so-called stimulus package, the $787 billion, calculated that 4 million jobs would be gained through this stimulus package, this government spending package on construction and so forth. But if 4 million jobs are created, so far 7 million jobs have been lost and the bottom isn't reached. The U.S. will still be at a negative point of number of people working. And as we've both mentioned, this doesn't really look at who is working and who isn't working because so many jobs have been dismantled in the past decade.
Well, Maya, to take this critique a little bit further, the current rate of unemployment is approaching projections for the entire 2009 that were just issued by the government. They've already exceeded those in just the month of March. At the beginning of the year, the Federal Reserve estimated the unemployment rate would reach 8.8% by the end of the year. It's already exceeded that. The adverse scenario employed by the Treasury Department in conducting what are called stress tests of banks envisions unemployment rates of 8.9%. It will exceed those levels next month. It'll hit 12.1% in a very relatively short period of time. William Gross is the head of bond investment fund, PIMCO. This is what he said to CNBC. "The unemployment rate is going to jump to double digits. The most staggering number," he said, "is the 5 million jobs lost over just 15 months. That's a lot of jobs. It's a lot of jobs to recoup. And 7 states now have unemployment rates of 10% or higher. 15 counties have over 20%. Once again, these figures do not take into account the unrecorded unemployed because they stopped looking for jobs and the underemployed. The downturn is creating, of course, a social disaster. So many people have been displaced by the foreclosure crisis that the Census Bureau is developing new methods of counting people who are living in what is called, euphemistically, unconventional housing. They're living in their cars, they're living in shanty towns, they're living in shacks, they're living on the streets. Here's the Financial Times, Terry Ann Lowenthal, a consultant. "Many people now who have lost their homes are doubling up with relatives or other families. They might be living in motels, tent cities are popping up everywhere." That's what they call unconventional housing, brothers and sisters. The scale and pace of job destruction sheds light on the character of the so-called stimulus measures of the Obama administration, because the Obama administration has already handed over more than $12 trillion in taxpayer monies, loans, and government guarantees to the banks, 15 times the size of any so-called stimulus package, and they are orchestrating at the same time a brutal restructuring of the auto industry, eliminating tens of thousands of jobs, gutting pensions and health benefits, poverty level wages for the remaining working class. We are witnessing the most ruthless class war. And just to put this again in perspective, the current downturn that is being put forward officially is close to being the worst since the Second World War, and the rates, as the World Socialist website critique demonstrates, are really very much rapidly approaching those of 1929.
Unemployment has hit double digits in 7 states already. These are Nevada, 10.1%, North Carolina, 10.7%, Oregon, 10.8%, Michigan, 12%, South Carolina, 11%, California, 10.5%, Rhode Island, 10.5%, and more states are reaching double digits. While there's more unemployment, Wall Street celebrated the biggest three-week gain in the Dow Jones Industrial Average since 1982, when the Obama administration pumped trillions of additional dollars into the banks. And this was hailed as economic improvement.
Maya, that was the bank shares on the stock market that went up. Let's be very clear about what that huge increase in the stock market was. Bank shares.
That's right. Not just bank shares, Ralph. Financial houses, the Wall Street investment houses, because it signaled that this administration is going to prop up the ruling rich at the expense of the workers of the United States. Again, let's look at this downfall in employment. That's 116,000 jobs lost in California alone, and Florida, much smaller state, had almost 50,000, and Texas, 46,000, Illinois, 37,000. As Stephen Cochran, a senior economist at Moody's Economy.com, told Bloomberg News, we so seldom see an economy down so broadly. There are more unemployed people in New Jersey now than at any time since the state began keeping records in 1976. New Jersey lost more than 30,000 jobs in the first 2 months of 2009, including almost 20,000 of the 30,000, two-thirds in February alone. The state's unemployment rate has risen for 13 consecutive months. That means for 13 months, more and more people are losing jobs. Let's look at New York City. The unemployment rate rose in February by the biggest amount in a single month in history, the state labor department reported. The city's jobless rate matched the national rate of 8.1%. But again, this doesn't reflect the precarious economy. There was a one-year rise of 4.4% earlier. All told, 335,000 unemployed people registered in New York City. This is a combined loss of the 40,000 jobs in finance and business services over the last year, along with the further loss that multiplies. We can look at some of the companies that have been laying off people, private and public. The U.S. Postal Service announced it's going to slash its management staff by 15%, with more than 14,000 processing, supervising, and management posts being eliminated. It's closing facilities in six states, offering early retirement to 150,000 workers. At our local post office, we were told that anyone with less than 5 years on the job is scheduled for layoffs. There's no more overtime. People are worried. The Boston School Committee announced that it approved a budget that could lead to the loss of 500 positions, including more than 200 teachers and classroom aides. This is happening in school systems across the nation. GM is something we're going to discuss in an entire show. So let's move on to other companies that are involved in the auto industries, because as they break up the auto manufacturers, this has implications for other companies, such as an auto supplier in Wisconsin, Johnson Controls, that is closing 10 plants. And Autoliv, the world's largest maker of seatbelt and airbags, said it's going to cut 3,000 more jobs in just the first 2 months of 2009. Well,
one of the things that Robert Reich says, somewhat naively, to Obama, he says, what are you doing destroying the auto industry? You don't want to destroy it. He says, you want to put it to making mass transit. You want to put it to rectifying the inability of people to get around inexpensively and without polluting the society. You have a vast opportunity to deploy the manufacturing capacity of General Motors, Chrysler, and Ford for social use. Well, The reason, of course, that's naive is that there's no way in hell that capitalism is going to undertake that, because they would be virtually self-liquidating themselves. This is borne out, brothers and sisters, by a report by Heidi Shearholtz and Catherine Edwards called Job Report Offers No Sign of Light at End of Tunnel. And it amplifies what we've been saying here about the structural character of this crisis in which jobs are being destroyed. Jobs are being destroyed because productive capacity is no longer viable in capitalist society. That is a fundamental concept which is something to be grasped. It was articulated in the third volume of Capital. It was spelled out by Rudolf Hilferding in Finance Capital in 1909. It's not as if we're reinventing the wheel here by this understanding of the nature of late capital. Leon Trotsky once said that capitalism is not just ripe for revolution, but rotten ripe. And that fundamental insight has to do with an understanding of what has become of our movement and the workers' movement in the aftermath of the First World War with the crisis of the Bolshevik Revolution. It's a subject we will address. But the inherent issue before us, brothers and sisters, is that there is no way out of this predicament of capitalism within the framework of that system. And as these reports clearly indicate this, the third steepest decline in 15 straight months. The addition of 694 workers to the jobless rolls means there are now 13.1 million unemployed in this country, 5.6 million more than at the start of this recession. That number, large as it is, vastly understates the labor market's slack because it accounts only jobless workers, and it goes on with this documentation of what semi-employment and non-official unemployment, that is to say, non-acknowledged unemployment, represents. This is the steepest decline, this report concludes, since the Great Depression. It exceeds the declines of 3.0 and 3.1 percentage points, respectively, for the period 79 to 83 and from 1953 to 54. By every criterion of any honest analysis, and you can find them in Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal, because you'll find more honest reporting than amongst the liberal fakers on these questions. One other point I want to make, Maya, about this particular crisis for working people. Isaiah J. Poole has an article of some importance called Job Crisis for African American Men. Everybody is familiar with the old saying, first to be fired, last to be hired. Well, as always, the most exploited sector of the working class is always that which bears the brunt of every crisis. And as this article states, as bad as the unemployment is for the nation, for the African-American community, it is far worse. African-Americans continue to bear a disproportionate share of the damage done. It is consequently a much greater focus than as to what the meaning of this crisis in capitalism is than is generally acknowledged. The unemployment rate, maybe officially, nationally, at 8.5, African Americans 13.3%. And in every respect, the impact on the most exploited sectors of the working class, African Americans and immigrant populations, is a multiple of the exploitation of the class at large. And that means repression, that means a war on black America, as it always has.
Ralph, 1 in 6 African-American men are out of work. The Economic Policy Institute paper found that African-American median family income declined by 1% between 2000 and 2007, and this is just based on government statistics. If you look also at the studies of what happened with African Americans since the Reagan era, the level of education has increased, but the level of income has not. The National Urban League's The State of Black America 2009 report stated, quote, "It is even more astonishing given that only 31% African Americans over 25 were high school graduates in 1970. And by 1990, the figure had climbed to 63.1%. Thus, while the educational attainment of African Americans doubled, African-American incomes remained unchanged." And what they mean by unchanged is that the median family income of African-American families was $26,461 in 1967. It rose to $30,762 by 1975, but then it fell back. This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, it's a depression, the relentless class war on working people. Ralph?
April 4th, 2009, New York Times, Peter Goodman and Jack Healy, 663,000 jobs lost in March, total tops 5 million. And it says, the swelling of the number of jobs surrendered beyond 5 million shows us that the government's response to the downturn is being put to a strenuous test. It is not meeting that test. The severity and breadth of the job losses which afflict industry prompts economists to conclude that an agonizing plunge in employment prospects is still unfolding. Quote, it is really just about as bad as can be imagined. Dean Baker stated, a director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, there is no way we are anywhere near a bottom. We'll be lucky if we stop losing jobs in a year's time, and that's unlikely. We're looking at a worse downturn than anyone had anticipated. We're going to need a lot more policy changes to do something about this. The dreadful jobs report landed among tentative signs of improvement with snippets of data lifting the stock market, but these have proven ephemeral. The same factors that assailed the economy for more than a year remain in ever greater force. The tattered banks are reluctant to lend. Even healthy households and businesses are afraid to invest in the face of grave uncertainty. The very perception that many millions more will lose jobs has turned such outlooks into reality. There will be no job growth. There's a lot of survival job cutting going on now throughout American business. There won't be any job growth. This economy, and this is Stuart G. Hoffman, chief economist at PNC Financial Group, this economy is far, far, far from being out of the woods. This is, in fact, the commentary of the insiders of the ruling class. It is beyond any question that the crisis is of a depth and of a duration that is structural. It's not time-related. It's not ephemeral. It is a structural crisis that cannot be resolved. It is inherent, and it will, in fact, be many magnitudes of severity in the crisis.
And, Ralph, what bourgeois economists do is they look at long waves, short waves. They look at the ebb and flow of depressions and recessions as they have existed during the development of the capitalist economy. But what they don't look at, and what you were referring to before, is they don't look at how capitalism really solves its crisis. The fake nature, as we've been talking about for years and years now, the move towards speculative economy. And as I pointed out, in the United States, the 85% of the workforce is involved in either health services or finance services or restaurants. This is not productive. Look at the Wall Street Journal and the impact on those who do have work and the impact on people looking for work. Job seekers face more bleak news by Sudip Reddy, April 3rd. 16 months into the recession, as you noted before, the job market continues to offer few signs of hope for U.S. workers. And what the Wall Street Journal looked at was the temporary employment, manpower, and other temporary agencies, largest sector of employment in the United States as employers. Temporary employment, generally seen as a leading indicator of a turnaround, is declining sharply. Even people who still have jobs are seeing their wages come under pressure, as employers, having already slashed payroll, look to furloughs and reduce shifts to stay afloat. We saw this in the state of California, where the Department of Motor Vehicles and other state agencies were closing one day a week, a forced furlough for state workers. My niece, who got a job in an architectural firm, first they laid off 20% of the workforce, then they laid off another 20%, then they put people on a furlough of working 4 days a week instead of five, they slashed the health contributions and so on, just to maintain the workforce at 50% of the prior level. The downturn, which in March matched the longest recession since the 43-month Great Depression, is leaving most unemployed workers little choice but to wait out the downturn even as it deepens. However, what does it mean to wait it out when you have no savings? And that's what we're going to discuss with the high foreclosure rates, as we've already discussed in prior shows. The fraction of adults who are working or looking for work fell again during the month to 59.9%, the lowest point since July 1985. And remember, this is still those registered as looking for work. There are the discouraged workers, those who have given up working in any official employment. And as I mentioned before, workers are exhausting their savings, turning to part-time work, or relying on the extension of unemployment benefits. Ralph?
Well, in the piece by Barry Gray, unemployment hits double digits in seven states. He indicates that in every, not just the seven states, but now virtually in every state, the unemployment numbers are heading for catastrophic magnitude here. And when here again to return to Ben Popkin in a financial analysis, 1.144 quadrillion is the total size of the derivatives budget. Buddy, can you spare $1.144 quadrillion? That's the total size of the derivatives market right now. It's the equivalent to $190,000 for every person on the planet. Popkin observes, derivatives and investment whose value comes from or derives from another arbitrary investment, stocks, credit, home mortgages. They're without a collateral base. They're speculative in character. It's basically paper shuffling. They print more money to get out of this predicament. And the consequence of this is that the value of the money becomes increasingly like confetti. And all those economies that depend on U.S. treasuries, that depend on a dollar that is nothing but a great Ponzi scheme of speculation and of deficit finance, paper shuffling, as I've indicated, are going to implode. From China to Japan to the Emirates to the Saudi royals, and for that matter, the European Union. Wall Street Journal, Sarah Murray on April 3rd. The unemployed are now losing their fallback options. The growing ranks of unemployed Americans who are turning to traditional fallbacks, retail, restaurants, customer service, the bad news is that the job openings there are disappearing too. Widespread trading down is sparking a fight for low-wage jobs that employers once struggled to fill. Finding a regular job is very challenging, said Mr. Hall. Working for Lowe's, I'd settle for that. I have a 4-year degree. I can find nothing. He joined more than 500 people at a job fair in Lewiston, a fading manufacturing hub. Hardware and appliance retailer Lowe's was among 30 employers recruiting, down from 46 last year, looking for part-time and seasonal employees, and it goes on. The fallback options are disappearing. Desperation means educated workers are trading down to jobs below their potential and with low pay. Painful long-term effects, hurting from their own career advancement to displacing those with less education or experience. It's a mad competition for jobs that don't give enough income to support those who are desperately seeking them. And the article in the Wall Street Journal continues, in the areas Americans could count on to get through past recessions, February's employment data shows that support services jobs are down 11%, food services are down, work and food preparation and services fallen by more than a quarter. The government gave its latest snapshot of the job market. The jobless rate has risen sharply from February at every level. Another gauge of joblessness, which tracks the unemployed, those who aren't looking for work but want it, part-timers who want full-time job, nearly 15% in February, up 9%. every criterion, and you'll find it, as I say, more honestly stated in the financial journals of capital, like the Wall Street Journal, than in the liberal media, which are attempting to give cover to Obama's weasel-like betrayal of working people.
Ralph, I'd like to look at one case study that was examined by the New York Times February 10th, Michael Luo reporting. This addresses the question of production in the United States versus the service industry. Months after plant closed, many still struggling. This is a profile of the Manchester Tool Company, which had been operating since World War II and, incidentally, was a profitable company. So profitable that it was bought out by a global conglomerate, Kennametal, that's based in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. The Manchester Tool Company is in New Franklin, Ohio. A few months into the recession, Kennametal decided to close down Manchester Tool Company. It's been 10 months since most of the workers walked out of the plain, low-slung factory for the final time, writes Luo. The building, which had been home to the Manchester Tool Company since just after World War II, sits dormant now, a for sale or lease sign in front, buried recently in fresh snow.
Well, Maya, housing is no longer available to working people. Cities deal with a surge in shanty towns. A chilling BBC study on Los Angeles' new shanty towns, made up of people who have lost their homes to the subprime meltdown and now living in tents and improvised shacks on abandoned land. That series is captured as well in the articles in the New York Times and in other publications. Here is a critique of what are called modern-day Hoovervilles. During the Great Depression, shanty towns sprang up in the outskirts of American cities. Populated by those who had lost jobs and been turned out of their homes, these Hoovervilles became an indelible symbol of the human suffering wrought by the Depression. Named in spiteful mockery of the president during the Depression's first 4 years, Herbert Hoover, who was fond of telling Americans that prosperity was around the corner. And indeed, the Hoovervilles are now in reemergence across the United States. New York Times, cities deal with a surge in shanty towns, the reemergence of itinerant encampments on the American cityscape. The most widely reported near Sacramento, California, in the capital city of America's richest and most populous state, but the Hoovervilles is more widespread than media attention on the tent city near Sacramento implies. Hoovervilles have emerged in Phoenix, Florida, Olympia and Seattle, Washington, Reno, Nevada, Portland, Oregon, Nashville, Tennessee, St. Petersburg, Florida, and Fresno, California, amongst others. People in these encampments are living in tents or shacks built of old wood, scrap metal, cardboard, and waste. They live without running water, electricity, plumbing, or garbage removal. The New York Times examination of Fresno, a city of 500,000. There are now five shanty towns surrounding Fresno. Michael Stoops, the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless, described the encampment's residents as able-bodied folks that did labor, who were previously able to house themselves based on their income. The population of these Hoovervilles represents only a small fraction of the population that finds itself without a home. The National Alliance to End Homelessness estimates that 3.4 million Americans will experience homelessness this year, a 35% increase, equivalent to the entire population of Berlin, larger than the population of Chicago and the state of Iowa. Driving the growth in homelessness is the foreclosure crisis, but the ranks of the homeless are filling up with former renters. The surge in home foreclosures is forcing up rental prices nationwide. The housing supply contracts. Apartment units are being foreclosed upon. So the renters who had not fallen behind on their payments are also thrown out. Before the onset of the economic crisis, a majority of the homeless population held jobs, and 44% were families with children. The portion among the homeless of working poor and families with children has risen dramatically. This is a massive social crisis sweeping the United States. It is almost entirely ignored by Barack Obama. During his national televised news conference, the only reference to the dimension of the social crisis engulfing the United States was Obama's comment that he would say to the families, especially children, who are sleeping under bridges and in tents across the country, that he regrets it. A declaration that sounded about as sincere as his anger over bonuses for AIG, which he proceeded to support. The most important thing that I can do on their behalf is to make sure their parents have a job. His administration, in other words, has absolutely no plans to address the homeless crisis and certainly none to provide jobs for working people. And once again, $10 trillion already to the banks. It's rising to $12.1 trillion. That is the underlying financial reality of the modern-day Hoovervilles and the shanty towns that are spreading across the United States. Faces of foreclosure in Pittsburgh. Working-class families feel the brunt of the housing crisis. The housing crisis is affecting thousands of working-class and poor families in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. 500 home foreclosures each month in Allegheny County. Last year, there were more than 4,000 foreclosures, this year on a pace to reach a record of 5,000 homes, twice the 2002 figure. These realities of the convergence of the foreclosure crisis and the crisis of capital and the unemployment which is engulfing people translate into despair, homelessness, shanty towns, and all of the conditions that denoted the Great Depression. Here again, David Kelly in the Los Angeles Times. Tent city residents required to wear wristbands. The city has issued wristbands, blue for Ontario residents who may stay, orange for people who need to provide more documentation, white for those who must leave. This is by David Kelly in the Los Angeles Times on April 1st. Ontario police and code enforcement officers descended upon the homeless encampment known as Tent City, separating those who could stay from those who will be evicted. Large, confused crowds formed ragged lines behind police barricades where officers handed out color-coded wristbands. Blue meant they were from Ontario and could remain. Orange indicated they had to provide more proof as to where they were from to avoid ejection. White meant they had to leave. When my husband gets out of jail, he can bring my marriage certificate. Will that count? Asked one tearful woman. They are tagging us, said Patty Barnes, who had her motorhome towed away last week as she shook with anger. They are tagging us because we are homeless, said she, staring at an orange waistband. It feels like a concentration camp. The land that they are living on is a wasteland. This is an area in which they have no infrastructure of health facilities, and the repression that accompanies their desperation is ongoing. Celeste Tretton, 53, rolled up in a wheelchair. She and her husband have an Ontario address. For years, they have lived in a truck, parking where they could find a safe place. She believes she would be able to find the paperwork to prove she was from Ontario. We thought if we came here, we could save some money. They've pulled the rug out from under us. She suffers from fibromyalgia, a painful disorder, and the article continues with the delineation of the tragic consequences for large and increasing numbers of citizens of the United States. Here again on March 26th, Jesse McKinley, cities deal with a surge in shanty towns. As the operations manager of an outreach center for the homeless here, Paul Stack, said, he's used to seeing people down in their luck. What we have never seen before was people living in tents and lean-tos on the railroad lots across from the center of town. They've popped up everywhere, he says. One day the area was empty, the next day there are people living there. Like cities across the nation, Fresno is dealing with the deja vu, the arrival of modern-day Hoovervilles, encampments of homeless people reminiscent of the Great Depression-era shanty towns, and in Seattle, homeless residents in the encampment call it Nicholsville, an unflattering reference to Mayor Greg Nichols. The tent city in Sacramento prompted Arnold Schwarzenegger to shift the entire encampment to a nearby fairground after a visit by the Oprah Winfrey Show set off such a news media stampede that fed-up homeless people complained of overexposure and asked to be left alone. The problem, the New York Times article continues, in Fresno is different. It is chronic and largely outside the national limelight. Homelessness here has been fed by the ups and downs in the falling of jobs in agriculture and the vast and wider net formed by the recession, drawing in large numbers of newly homeless, from hitchhikers to truck drivers to electricians. Quote, these are able-bodied folks. They did labor at minimum wages or better. They were previously able to house themselves based on income. The surging number of homeless people in Fresno has been a surprise. City officials say they have three major encampments near downtown and settlements along two outside highways. Thousands of people are homeless here, according to Gregory Barfield, the city's homeless prevention and policy manager, and is an ample measure of the war, the class war, on working people.
The class war on working people, as Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, wrote, it's a depression. He urged the Obama administration focus on working people, not Wall Street. Today on Taking Aim, we've discussed it's a depression, the relentless class war on working people. Next week, we will focus on Barack Obama as the capitalist mouthpiece, his policies at the expense of working people, and in particular, we will look at the situation at General Motors, the 100-year-old auto manufacturer, a stalwart of production in the United States. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, It's a Depression, the Relentless Class War on Working People. We'll be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Please contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net. We'll be with you next week.